Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Dane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience in enhancing team dynamics and innovation. This week's guest, Mark Kruth, is a pragmatic modern work designer and coach. Mark's mission is to inject modern ways of working, a transformation mindset, and the power of expert storytelling into everything he does. Mark works as the principal modern work coach for Atlassian and spends his days coaching both Atlassian and customer teams on new ways of working. Here's what you'll uncover in today's episode. First, mastering narrative and teamwork. Dive into the world of storytelling with Mark as he explains how narrative can drive team alignment and vision, shaping the future of collaborative efforts. Second, crafting effective working agreements. Discover the crucial role of working agreements in team operations, providing a framework that enhances clarity and reduces friction among team members. Finally, understanding team decay and revitalization. Learn about the subtle signs of team decay and the proactive steps teams can take to rejuvenate their dynamics and improve overall performance. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Gruneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group. And today I'm joined by Mark Kruth. Mark has been in some very cool roles. I met him at Team 24, which was Atlassian's conference this year. So modern work coach, keynote speaker, the voice of teamwork. And there was also a title in there once, which was Team Doctor for Ways of Working. So it's going to be a fun conversation. Welcome, Mark.
Dane, thanks so much for having me. And you are correct. I have had a variety of different roles. Whenever a door closes, I just bust through a wall, you know, and find a new path.
That's it. And when we met, you were dressed up as Super Mario at the conference. So that fits very neatly.
It really is, you know. Here we go.
So tell me, and for the benefit of our listeners, tell us a little bit more of your story, how you came to be doing this cool work.
It has definitely been a journey, and one where I always had a feeling I'd be doing something in this space. This particular job, never would have thought in a million years. But I've always been obsessed with teamwork practices, organizational design, development within, you know, how do we optimize for an organization? And it actually all started out actually first thing out of school, where I had the opportunity to work on a software team that was practicing, term of agile software development. They were practicing Scrum, and it just opened my eyes to what good intentional collaboration could look like. And then I had the opportunity to work for a team that didn't do that, and I was like, I never want to do that again. Like, I want to go back to that first thing. And actually, ever since then, I've just had the opportunity. I found myself in opportunities where I get to express that, you know, be able to, whether it be lead within an organization to help kind of, you know, help with a transformational effort, or be part of a team that's developing something, but helping them do it in a slightly different way. And so it's been one hell of a journey. I came to Atlassian 5 years ago, and I came into Atlassian in a role that was focused in on our largest enterprise customers who were bringing in some, you know, agile at scale ways of working. And I came in to help implement the products for them. But really, my focus was, when I came in, was to actually help them think about their practices before they brought the products in. Because one of the things that we were experiencing, and I think everybody experiences this, is that everyone will buy a tool and be like, hey, this is going to help us solve our problems. But there's really never a solution in the product. It actually has to come from your ways of working. So I came in and I did a lot of work with those customers, helping them figure out how they wanted to work in a new way, and then brought the tooling in on top of that. And I had a great time doing that, worked with a lot of awesome companies that it just helped them think about this differently. And it kind of led me into a space where Atlassian, we've always been the teamwork company. We've always been focused in on this idea of practice and how do we help our customers learn more. they wanted to put some more dedication there. And that's where things like we did some experiments around what we called our work doctors. And we did some work doctor work where we went to customers and solely helped them with practices and helped them learn different ways of working based on our ways of working. And then ultimately that led me into my current role, which is a modern work coach. And it's the greatest made up title there is, but it really does resonate with what I do. I tell you that because one of the things, like as I came into this role, I told my boss, Dominic Price, he's our work futurist. I told him that if I go and do this role where I'm very external facing, helping to bring our practices, I said, I don't want to lose the hands-on aspect with customers. You know, it's like, That's such an important piece for me because one, that gives me new experiences. It gives me new stories I can use with our customer, you know, from our customers. And so he says, I still want to be hands-on to some extent. He says, oh, yes, I want you to be. And so we landed on this idea of modern work coaching as I go out and, you know, I speak to at a lot of events. I do a lot of workshops with customers. I do a lot of this one-on-one coaching with customers too to help them reimagine how they work in this modern age. I mean, over the last 4 years, we've accelerated about four decades in terms of ways of working. Yeah. And the problem is we've accelerated, but our practices and how we work and how we team did not keep up with that pace. And so I think there's an ample opportunity here to help us fix that and address that and starting going back to things like the basics. So that's what I get to do every day. I absolutely love it. And I also get to chat with awesome people like you, which makes it even better.
Oh, it's magic. It's such an ecosystem play there, Mark. I love the way you describe needing to be hands-on with the customer because you get to see what's working in very different formats, different teams all of the time. So it drives a lot of influence from the outside too.
Oh, 100%. I think that's one of the biggest things is you get to truly understand what happens when you have an idea and it gets exposed to oxygen, you know, because there's a lot of things we can do. I always like to joke that I'm like, you know, I love theory. Theory is great with a glass of bourbon in my hand and, you know, maybe reminiscing a little bit, but like, well, what if, you know? But, you know, the thing is theory almost never makes it through that first filter. And, you know, you've got, some elements will keep strong, but it's getting out there and actually getting exposed to what happens. And again, that's the thing that then I learn and I can tweak and I can continuously evolve an approach to the point where now, instead of just putting a theory out there and then waiting to hear back, I'm actively trying to push it forward and learn and adapt and learn and adapt as I go. And I think it gives me the ability to adapt quickly, but adapt quickly, because that's how we usually work within Atlassian. But it also gives us that ability, to your point, to empathize with our customers, to build up some of our narratives with them, to really understand, like, what are they trying to accomplish? Because at the end of the day, they're the person. It's not our products that we want to be we were talking about this earlier. It's not our products that we want to be the hero of their story. We want them to be the heroes of their stories. And we need to understand who that hero is. What's their ups? What's their downs? What's the journey they're going on?
Yeah. Yeah. I've always seen that from a change management perspective when people come in with a tool or a really strong framework. And they're like, this is what you need to do. If you don't really put it in the hands of the team members that are going to use it and let them really own it and grow through it, then it's going to be dead on a shelf soon.
Oh, Will. It's funny. We always talked about it. So I did a lot of work with, like, you know, organizational coaching, and the joke was always that you needed to be the third coach in, because the first coach would come in and they'd share an idea and everyone would be like, oh, that's garbage, I don't like that. They'd be out of there. Second coach come in and they share the same idea. Oh, I don't like that. You know, I heard it before, but I don't like that. They're out. Third coach comes in. They make similar observation. They're like, you know what? Love that. Or we have this idea. Like, oh, we want to try this. And now as a coach, you sit there and you ride along. You're like, yes, I love that idea. Let's do that. Because at the end of the day, to your point, if I'm trying to push something on you, it's never going to stick. I needed you to own that, even if it's something that I helped you get to. And even if at the end of the day, you're like, that, I had this great idea. And I'm like, that is a great idea. Like, you never heard it from me. It was your idea. That's what I want at the end of the day. Cause then they'll own it, to your point.
Absolutely. And you intentionally picked that word narrative. I know before the show, we were talking about the power of story. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can dive in a little bit there on how, when you're going in to look at the ways of working before deploying a tool, how do you create that story with leaders and teams?
You know, it's fascinating because I've always been a huge advocate of storytelling in the workplace, and that in using it as a mechanism to, one, create vision, but also to just motivate, help us understand what's going on and really paint a good picture. And so a lot of times when I'm working with our customers, a lot of my work goes into discovery. And, you know, it's trying to understand all the data points. And then from those data points, what I like to do is then we build like the current picture, like what's going on, like what's a day in the life of somebody today. And that's actually an exercise I'll do is, you know, we say a day in the life and we try to walk through all these elements, because the more connection I can have, the more ability to relate to something in the current state, the so much more powerful it is. Now, in the current state, as we're looking at things, the big thing I found is that gives them their baseline. That gets them into the conversation. Like, cool, I understand this. It makes sense in my world. And then as we start layering on, like, what's next? What's in the future? How do you want to build this forward? It's layering on elements of that story that kind of shows what's possible. And ultimately, you want to get them to the point where, you know, they have to take steps to get there, but you've painted such a possible picture for them because you walked their hand, you know, you've grabbed their hand, you've walked with them down that journey. They're like, this is actually doable. And I think that's the power of story. I can go in and tell you an end state right now and you'd be like, I don't know. And especially a customer who, you know, may not even believe that they could ever get there. But if I've been able to walk you through the story of you getting there, all of a sudden I've suspended that disbelief you had. And you're like, you know, this seems possible. And now it's getting you to take that first step on a journey. And that goes back, whether it be, you know, the practices you're bringing on or trying something new in a product or whatever it is. It's such a powerful tool. And it doesn't have to be a traditional story as you hear it, but it's purely using that power of narrative to help kind of paint a picture for people, because that's how we talk. That's how we learn as people. And I think that's been one of the biggest things I've had success with, working with customers using story in there.
I like this concept of the day in the life and then the what's next. It reminds me of a process that Lydia Touche on my team, she's my chief of staff, helped me run through when she joined me and the team. She came in and said, let's do an off the plate exercise. Let's do everything that's on your plate now. And everything that you want to be on your plate next year. And then let's bridge how we make those changes. So it's like, hey, let's do less financial analysis and more customer time. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. How do we bridge that?
I love that. And again, it puts it into perspective for you, because one of the things that you say, you connect to, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I guess I have to get rid of something if I want to put something else on here.
Yeah. So when you go and do that with the team, I've done it as an individual leader. How do you sort of cascade and flow that story down when you've got multiple teams, multiple departments? You're working at scale with some pretty large organizations.
So the biggest thing I found that I've been successful with is, again, you need the and it kind of goes back in time. So back in the day, there was these like bards that would go out there and they'd learn a story. They would go tell it and they would travel from village to village to share information. And I'll be honest, that is probably one of the best mechanisms I continue to find, where I get a group going. I teach the leadership team this story. We all learn it together. And then one of their biggest actions is like, now you need to go cascade and tell this same story to your team. And then within your team, that team, someone in that team needs to go, or those leaders need to go to their teams and share it. And so using that kind of like ownership model has helped tremendously. Now, sometimes, to your point, a hugely, you know, large enterprise, that could take a long time. So another mechanism that we tend to use, even at Atlassian, we're 10,000, or no, actually now we're like 13,000 people, I realize. We're pretty big now. And so with that, we've started to use, especially in a digital world, we've started to use the power of tools like Loom, which is one of our products that we own. It's an async video tool. And what we like to do with that one, and I'll have people do, is actually record that story. You know, maybe you've got some visuals, something like that, and then share it out with your organization. And the beautiful thing about that is I find that telling a story like that using video is just so much more impactful. And it goes back to the same reason why I would send people to places, you know, they would go to another staff meeting or something like that to share a story versus just sending out like a written, you know, story. I mean, like, hey, here's a Confluence page with all that stuff. It's impactful, but it's not as impactful as you telling it or me telling it, because there are things that we can do as we share that story that help make it more impactful. Our pace, our tone, you know, even the way we say words has such a dramatic impact. And so that's been one of the, you know, in the digital age, using, this is where technology can enable you to actually spread your word a little bit faster. So using tools like Loom has helped us to do it. And we do that all the time internally within Atlassian too. We have an idea we need to share. It goes out through Loom with some visuals, and all of a sudden now you're hearing the narrative from somebody, and it's just, it leaves that little bit more lasting impression.
Yeah, that's neat. And I like how accessible and inclusive Loom can be in that setting. It reminds me, so right now I've got three kids, and my middle daughter is an introvert and she's quite reserved. She loves to do art, but she'll get onto a bunch of TikTok and YouTube videos. And it's amazing because when she'll light up is she's interacted with this material, whether it's a character or a story or a piece of art that she sees being made. And then she'll light up and she'll come to me to share something that she's taken away from it.
Now, oh, that's cool.
It's a really cool way for an introvert to kind of bridge into extroversion in a team setting in the same way. Like sometimes if there's a town hall and a leader just says a whole bunch of stuff, there's people in the room that just can't
engage. They haven't been able to absorb it, right? They couldn't. They just physically can't, you know?
Yeah. It's cool.
I really love that story with your daughter because it's such a great, I mean, that right there is a great analogy to this idea of like, hey, how do we absorb information? How do we share information? Because honestly, you're right. It does vary. And how we do it, the setting we do it in, that's super powerful. I love that story.
It's very cool. And she's only 11, so I continue to be
impressed, right? Exactly. Impressed.
Yeah. There's all of us who have got multiple years working in a workplace and we still struggle with some very simple teamwork and collaboration efforts.
It's amazing how much, especially over the last few years even too, we've seen teamwork decay, because it kind of goes back into we almost saw like a heightened, it was like a false heightening that happened in early 2020 that was kind of resulted in us feeling like we needed to come together. Like we were all banding together around an issue, a global issue, and it helped us to actually connect better at first. But then the problem was that so often is that we went in and we had this false kind of hype, but then all of a sudden we didn't have any infrastructure, no support. And really, when I say infrastructure, I don't mean tools. Mm. I mean, we didn't have the practices to help enable us to continue that heightened scent, like heightened pace of interaction and connection. And instead what happened was we saw a tool, which was things like meetings. And we said, well, we'll just make everything a meeting and we won't actually be intentional with our time anymore. And so I've seen it. It's amazing to see teamwork kind of degrade over the last few years, because it was something that we had seen the rise. We'd seen what's possible, but we just simply didn't put any practices in place. And I think that's, to me, one of the biggest reasons why, when you go back to things like remote and distributed work, you know, a lot of people continue to bang that drum around remote work and, you know, like the pros of it. And I agree. I mean, Atlassian, we're a distributed first company. But the biggest thing I look at here is that I don't actually blame many of these organizations for getting rid of remote work, because of the fact that most of these organizations never put the practices in place to properly enable it. You know, and remote work itself is actually pretty easy to solve. It's technology. But the distributed work practices that are needed, if those aren't in place, I'm going to see low efficiency. I'm going to see disconnection. I'm going to see quiet quitting. I'm going to see all of that, because people aren't connecting anymore. People aren't, coming together the same way they used to. And without that intentionality, it starts falling apart. So I can understand and empathize with some of these companies who are trying to bring people back in, only because I don't think they know what they needed to do to solve this. I think that's the scary part, right? So I don't know if you've seen the similar things as you've talked with leaders out there.
Yeah, no, I think that's real, Mark. And I hadn't ever heard of someone stated as teamwork in Decay, but I really like what you're getting at there. And I think that's what drives my curiosity, because we were talking before the show that most teams can have moments of greatness, but sometimes they don't know why they had that moment of greatness, and they sure don't know how to keep having moments of greatness.
Yep.
And so I think that there was a great statement I read from a org design, org dev PhD only a few weeks ago. And he said, it's not that we're trying to rebuild organizations in a remote world. It's that we're trying to build a healthy, functioning organization for the first time in 3,000 years.
Like, it really is. You know what? Yeah. That's the thing. It's like these foundational pieces. Honestly, and I always like to say, a lot of teamwork was by accident, to your point. You know, that's before, especially when we were all in the same space. You know, when we were in the same space, I could overhear what you said, or I could see everyone going and doing something. I'm like, oh, I should probably follow along.
Yeah,
there was a lot of this. We called it osmosis, but it was accidental. That's really what it was. You know, and then when we kind of went apart, all that, all those osmosis moments were gone, and now all of a sudden, there was nothing to stand on. And so I really love that. I mean, I don't love it. I think it's terrible. But that line of like, we're trying to build healthy organizations for the first time in like 3,000 years, because we are. I think that was really the thing that launched us over the last few years into this new way of working, is that we realize teamwork actually has always been broken. How do we get back to the basics? And honestly, that's where I preach all the time. You know, I go into organizations and I talk to some of the basic elements of what I consider good, healthy teams. And we've done some work, research in Atlassian around this. And what I tell my customers, and I tell these teams, is that, like, you know, the foundation of teamwork is not hard. Honestly, you could establish a foundation in about a half day, you know?
Yeah.
It's a series of simple practices. If you go, for us, we look at it as four different things. One, you build yourself a working agreement to understand and become a little bit more intentional about how you work together and making those implicit assumptions explicit. You build a team poster to have your alignment. How are you going to work? Like, what are you working towards? You get clear on things like roles and responsibilities. And then one of the things that's happened over the years that we see is that teams need other teams. So identify those teams. We call this identify your network of teams. Who are the teams you need to build relationships with? And how are you intentionally going to do that? And I think there's that word there, you know, intentionally is across each one of these. And we found that if you establish these core things, you know, what you're doing, why you're doing it, you know, how you're doing it, you know, who's doing it, and you know who else you need to help do it. Honestly, it's not that hard. But the thing is we assume it's got to be harder. We sit there and we're like, it can't be that easy. No. We've got to go. We've got to do the advanced step first. Like, it's this one.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, go back to basics.
Yeah. And it's real. And I think people maybe are afraid to think that it's that simple. They're like, well, we need to have a 3-day offsite and come up with a whole lot of strategy and talk about market research, because if we don't do that, how's the board or the CEO or someone going to get behind?
It's almost like a justification. I like how you put that, because it's like we feel like we have to. It feels like a hard problem, so we have to have a hard solution for it. You know?
Yeah,
it's got to be a matched level. When we never really got the beginnings right, and I think that's where it just goes back to. I think those advanced solutions, a lot of times, like the deep dive and strategy, all these sorts of things, those are necessary too. But they're not valuable unless you have that beginning part. Otherwise, you go in and you start thrashing around strategies. You come up with a strategy, you leave, you're misaligned, and now we're all executing a differently formed strategy in our heads. Mm-hmm. And now at the end of the day, it's like that stereotypical picture you see where everyone's got a piece of rope and they're all tied together, and then they all go different ways and they don't move anywhere, you know? And I think that's what I find, you know, is it's so often we think we have we all approach it with the best intentions. And I think that's the thing. That's the sad part, is that we're all coming at it from the best intentions. I never think any of this stuff is malicious. You know, there's no one out there trying to self-sabotage here. Yeah. I think it's unfortunately just ignorance. It's like, you know, we just don't realize what we don't know. And so if we can get those things that we don't know brought out to the open, now we know, and now we can actually take action on that.
Yeah. No, I like that a lot. So just diving back into that working agreement, because I think I saw you and Dominic talk about that at Teams 24. How does a small business owner go about thinking about a working agreement for their team?
You know, working agreements are probably the single most important artifact that a team can create. And I will argue that they're probably one of the easiest to do too, because a working agreement is something that doesn't have to be the same. It shouldn't be the same for every team. It's something unique to a team to basically help call out those things where there is friction. For us, for Atlassian, we put out actually some good examples of these for the public to use. We actually have this resource called the Atlassian Team Playbook, which has all these different practices that we follow that's published online for free. There's no sign up needed, no nothing like that. We just want to share how we work so that others can learn from that. One of those is the working agreement. And we'll give you some things in that with like a template of like, here are some of the big questions. Because if it's like a small business owner is looking to say like, hey, I've got a team, I'm trying to work more effectively with them, more efficiently.
Yeah.
We may want to figure out some of the core things like, hey, how do we want to communicate with each other? I think that's one of the biggest things that we miss on, especially in a digital age where I might be on this thing, my cell phone, texting you. I could be on Slack. I could be on Teams. I could be on email. I could be on Confluence. I could be keep naming them, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the thing is when we don't understand what things we're using to communicate, why we'd use them for this versus that, we start losing some of that efficiency. We even the effectiveness. I miss something, and thus I don't make the best decision. And so for us, it's getting clear about things like that. And it could simply be listing, for us, we even say, get simple, list out the tools and say why you would use this for what, what's your internal SLA. We also talk about things like, what kind of team norms would you expect, for a team that might be distributed around the United States, let's say. We've got, in the continental United States, we'll go from, Eastern time zone to Pacific time zone. And the thing is within that, you've got enough swing where maybe you want to make sure there's people online joining you for a conversation at certain times of the day. So you might establish as a team set of core hours. Hey, these are going to be the periods of times we're going to meet because it's the best overlap. And we agree to that versus me making an assumption on the West Coast saying, hey, or actually maybe Dane, you're on my team. You make an assumption that, Mark works late. You set up something for 5 p.m. Pacific. That's 8 p.m. for me on the East Coast, And so now all of a sudden there's friction in our team because that's what all this causes is friction. And so for me, the more you can remove that friction or at least put light on it, the easier it is to get rid of it. And so I think working agreements, again, there's not one that's the same. I've seen teams that create them based on values. I've seen teams that create them based on meetings.
Yep.
Whatever it is, look at where there's the most friction and focus there. And then they're living, breathing documents. Spend some time, after using that. Hey, where do we still see friction? If we see more, we may come back to that. But I think as a leader out there who is trying to maybe help their teams just get those inches, get that a little bit of more efficient, a little bit more effective for an hour's worth of time to have a conversation and build a working agreement, you'll see spades in terms of like your payback on that. Just because, again, you're getting rid of the friction. It's just going to move smoother and faster because I don't have to worry about the noise.
Yeah. And I like friction as a word too, because every team suffers from friction, but most of them suffer in silence. So actually,
yes, we assume it's just how we work. We're like, this is just how work happens, right?
Yeah, which is empowering, because as a leader, particularly in a more hierarchical organization, you're giving everyone not just a picture of the destination we're going to. You're actually giving them the map to say, hey, are we on track with what we've agreed? And if we veered off, how do we get back on track? Or why are we choosing this new path to that same destination?
Well, and that's to me one of the things I love about working agreements is that oftentimes when there's friction on teams and we don't have something like this that we've talked about, it looks like it's Mark's opinion onto Dane. It's like, well, Mark gets annoyed apparently because of X, Y, and Z. But if you and I have had a conversation, our team has had a conversation around certain expectations we have with each other, and let's say one of us is violating that, now it's no longer about my opinion. I basically just point out and say, hey, didn't we agree on our working agreement to this?
Yeah.
And the thing is if we say, yeah, we did, I usually just respond with, do we want to keep our working agreement like that? Or are there circumstances that has changed that requires us to reevaluate? And I will say I've never had someone come back and say like, oh yeah, we need to change our working. It's mostly like, well, shit, you know, I'm sorry. I completely overstepped on that one. And it de-escalates the situation so quickly because it's no longer about a person versus a person. It's a team versus an activity. And yeah. Now all of a sudden it's like, oh, I realize why, what I did. Because I was part of the people who made that agreement, you know?
Yep. Absolutely. Which reminds me, we need to look at your t-shirt here for anyone who's listening.
Here we go. Here you go, folks. You see that?
Cut the tool shit.
Teamwork shouldn't be so hard, right?
So true.
Goes back to the foundations.
True. Yeah. I read in an article, it was probably a year ago now, that I think we'd put out something like $1.2 billion of spend on new tools in small businesses. And then written off about $900 million of that. It may have actually been a bigger number.
You know what? I would.
It may be 1.2 trillion and 900 billion in tools based on what I'm seeing out there. But it was a huge number. It was like 75% of all these tools we've deployed are getting turned off or not used.
Yep. Because they look at it and it blows my mind so often that you see a tool. Again, they pick it up for probably good reasons, but it goes right back to what we were talking about earlier. There was never a foundation of practices there to enable that. There was no change management in place to help bring it about as like a way to help somebody succeed. It was lifted up as the solution versus actually saying, hey, this is something that supports you as you're getting to, you're solving this problem in maybe a different way.
Yeah,
and honestly, if I look at things like what we saw with the contraction of our economy over the last few years, you know, you see, and of course, who got hit the most? Tech sector got hit the most in terms of, you know, the contraction. And the reason is you start seeing things like, I remember looking at things like as reports were coming out from Wall Street, things like that back in 2022, you know, you saw some companies pull back. But then all of a sudden you saw the tech companies pull back dramatically. And the reason is that the moment that the environment became a little bit more, needed to be a little bit more efficient and effective, they started to look, organizations realized we need to look at things like our tools. Because guess what? We all bought these tools during those 2 years beforehand in order to solve the problems that we were experiencing during the pandemic. And then all of a sudden we realized, we deployed them, but nobody's logging in. Nobody's using them. So yes, let's go ahead and get rid of these. And so you saw all this cuts happening, and it wasn't because they were simply saying, we can't afford it. Most of those cuts were coming because they're like, honestly, we're trying to save money and no one's using it. And it's not the same as Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will not come.
It's the opposite. If you build it, they may run away.
Honestly, that's probably more likely.
Yeah. It's interesting because we've had guests come on the show before and say it's no longer the chief technology officer or the chief information officer that is responsible for all of the software and tools that are bought by a company. It's become fragmented within organizations as to who buys what and when and for what purpose. So that makes it really tricky.
Well, it is. And that's where we see a lot of times, like for Atlassian, for example, like, you know, we have, especially, you know, within the software development space, we've got it. You know, we've been there for a long time. We're a known entity. But outside of software, you know, when you start thinking about marketing, sales, legal, any of these groups, you know, we're not a known entity. And for us, a lot of our competitors out there have done a great job simplifying the process of bringing about something to help them become more efficient, whether it be your Asanas, your Mondays, whatever it is. What they've done is they've gone about and they've made it and actually they've taken a play from our playbook. If I really am honest about this, back in the early days of Atlassian, even today, it was a lot of the flywheel. It was a lot of the, I can go in, I can drop my credit card in, and I can sign up for 50 licenses. It's a SaaS-based product. I give them to all my fellow marketers. And now guess what? We're all using the same thing. versus, you know, some of these more robust systems. Like actually, if you have a big footprint of Atlassian at your organization, you're likely going to struggle to bring about that software over, because now you're going over and having to work with procurement and everything to bring it over, versus you just went over and signed up. And I think that's where you see this tool sprawl. Now, of course, the efficiency needs cause us to look at that and say, hey, where do we shore things up? Because I've even seen back in the day, we had customers at Atlassian who had like 15 instances of Jira in their organization. And for us, we're like, let's help you consolidate those. For one, you can better manage that. But two, you're going to save a lot of money because each one of those have their own, you know, costs associated with them. But I think the thing is it's just so accessible today for an organization to go in and say, hey, I don't know about Atlassian. I'm going to go. But I, one of my friends in my marketing community said, hey, we use Monday. Oh, I'm going to go try that and see how that works. And again, there, it's just so easy to do it. The problem still always will remain, though, is how do you make sure you start with intention? And whether it be, and that's where I think CTOs, CIOs really need to be partnering back with the rest of their organization in a way to better understand their problems. They're almost becoming, they're becoming that service organization now. Hey, let us help solve your problems versus like, hey, here are your tools to use. You know, it's like, no. You need to approach it as though they are your customer.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is probably a good opportunity for people leading those teams. I mean, we've all worked for companies where people stopped calling help desk and just started calling it desk.
Desk, right?
So it's an opportunity now for a lot of those professionals on those teams to be getting in and partnering with the different functions and saying, hey, where are you in terms of your process and the tools that you use to support your process?
And I think that service mindset is, I think, honestly, as we're thinking about going into the future too. So, you know, the name of this podcast is The Future of Teamwork. And I think one of the elements of that future is actually approaching work from more of a service-based mindset. And not thinking of it as like service tickets, but like thinking about it as these relationships that it's like, what do I offer? What do you offer? How do you need to interact with me to be able to get those things? Because I want to help you. You need to make sure you're interacting with me the best to do it, and vice versa. And that's where things like I mentioned, that network of teams, that whole element is about building relationships between teams and understanding how do we connect? Because again, you know, teamwork is kind of that atom level. It's that foundational bit. But the thing is nothing great is ever done anymore by a single team, in my opinion. I think it requires multiple teams working in tandem from different perspectives. And so you have to figure out how to approach it from that service mindset, because it allows you to then think about how you live in an ecosystem versus it goes back to the hero's journey. You're the hero. It's like, no. Even in that perspective, you are not the hero. You are still a component of that journey, you know?
Yeah.
And so how do you get there? You think about how you interact with other teams to get to that destination.
Yeah. I remember hearing, I think it was Dominic speak about it at the conference. And if I remember it correctly, he was saying go up two teams and go down two teams. So could you expand a little bit more on that sort of team network model?
Yeah. So for us, what we like to do, so we do this network, we look around us from our teams and we look at the value stream from, and essentially who we work with. And so with that up two teams, down two teams, it's looking about where do we live in that value stream? And we can think about those teams that we directly work with. That's right before us, right after us. And that it helps a ton if we can build those relationships. But our big encouragement is that work is so complex that the things that we need from the team right next to us, who's giving us something, is likely, like, we could even get a little bit better, a little bit more effective, is if we understood how they were getting that. And so working back even further in that value stream to understand, okay, this is the origin of something, or this is how things are coming into the teams that I work with. One, it'll give me more empathy for that team that I work with. But then two, it'll actually give me the ability to communicate better with that team I work with, because I know how they're getting that information or what they need from that other team, and vice versa down the stream too. Because again, the goal is about smoothing things out. It's not about what is it? Like systems thinking. Systems thinking is all about, you got to optimize for the whole, not the component. Because when you optimize for yourself, and I think that's one of those fallacies in teamwork, when you just focus on your team, you'll get better, but you're just gonna move the bottleneck in the system. You're not gonna actually help the system. And so for us, that's when we think about network of teams, it's about understanding that larger ecosystem in that way.
I like that a lot. And it calls into question, it may even go back to your team doctor experiment, that do we need people in these collaborator roles? Because teams are inevitably overworked. So when you've got a busy team, it's hard for them to stop and lift their head up and say, let's go and better understand how that team gets their data, or let them know what we do with their data so that they can be better informed as they're shaping it. But because those teams are busy, the conversation doesn't happen. So like, are we going to
see priority of the evolution? Urgent.
Yeah, exactly. So is there going to be an evolution of people who come in and do this kind of internal consultant service role to facilitate?
You know, it's interesting. So often, like back, if I think back to my days in the agility space within software realms, like that role of honestly, like an agile coach was a thing that was there, and it's still there to a sense. The problem I found with that, though, is that when you have that external person, they are great to help you facilitate something, to help you, you know, when you want to do something, to think outside the box a little bit. But when they're applied to a system as someone who's kind of like almost starting to be held accountable for the fixing of the system, it starts to fall apart just because, just like we talked about earlier, that aspect of ownership and feeling like if I'm getting something applied against me, I may not want that. Even though it's the best thing for me, it's the best treatment, I may not want that. And so one of the things I've kind of come over the years, I've kind of come to this belief is that I honestly think the usage of coaches and facilitators are great to supplement how we get to the answer. But at the end of the day, this has to come back down to people like our leaders on our teams. And I think that's one of the things that gets missed all the time. And I know so often they're like, leaders have so much put on them. It's like, I understand that, but that's simply covering up the issue. It's saying that, all right, I don't have time. I don't know if you've seen the comic where it's the caveman and the guy's got the cart and he's got square wheels and the other guy's saying, hey, what about these round ones? Or like, I'm too busy. I'm sorry. For me, that's what it is when it comes to leadership, is that you actually, yes, you might feel like you're overwhelmed, but honestly, we are the ones, the makers of our time. We control that. I know. When I've always dug into it with people, at the end of the day, they might feel like, oh, I've got so many meetings, everyone needs my time. I'm like, but who controls where you spend your time? And it ultimately is that person. And so I always go back to being like, this has to be a leadership play. It has to be something where whether you're a line level leader and you have a team, or you're someone like an SVP and you've got a whole division, you have to be the one to be able to think a little bit externally around this and actually be able to apply this to your teams. And you know what? This is where now you can bring in a facilitator to maybe help you do that. You might get someone to be like, hey, you know what? I can't be objective about this, or I want to be part of this conversation. I'm going to bring in a facilitator to help me. So I think that there is a role for facilitation and some of these coaching in there. But one of the things we saw in the agility world that I don't want to see happen again is that the ownership moved from leadership to coaches, and then it fell apart because coaches shouldn't own anything. And now all of a sudden you put someone with no authority, no true influence in charge of something that honestly it's leadership's responsibility for. So that's my little soapbox on that.
I really appreciate
that. You got to find that time, folks.
Because there's a lot of people out there. I think even Josh Burson came out recently saying HR needs to reposition itself as an internal consultant. But I think we run into the same problem that you've identified, which is that it's a leadership problem first and foremost. And if leaders are going to abdicate responsibility for getting back to the basics of how they're going to run teamwork and energy restoring practices and all of those important things, then it doesn't matter who does it or what their motives are. It's just not going to land.
then you get to those age-old team-building activities, which we all make fun of, right? You know, it's like that thing where like, oh, God, another team-building activity, you know, because it doesn't have the intention in mind. It's not actually what that team needs. And maybe that activity is really great, but it's not coming at it from the lens of the leader saying, hey, we're missing this. You know, it's coming from someone saying, hey, let's do this activity. And I think that's that missing piece. So that's going to always be my call to action for leaders out there is pull those reins, take ownership of your team, your organization's, you know, journey through finding those healthy foundations and try something. It doesn't take a lot of hard work. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's as much as it feels like it's going to take it's going to take a lot out of you. It might be one step back because you got to slow down for a moment, but it's going to be like going back on a slingshot. And then when you let go, you know, you're going to make up that in spades.
Yeah. That I guess that's my final realization from that line of thinking, Mark, which I really appreciate. I had a conversation with some friends, Jen and MG, over the weekend, and they both played college sports. And they said, why don't we look at coaching in the college sports context versus in like the executive coaching context? And there's a big difference to your point, which is a coach in college actually has a role in the organization. They're not just an outsider that comes in and does some coaching. They've got the title coach, but they're running a team, a capability through that team.
Yeah, and there's accountability, right? I think that's that word is. When I look at a coach in any kind of sports team, there's accountability there.
Yes. Yeah, that is the key word. Well, this has been a great conversation. It's flown by. There were some great talking points. I love the way that you focus on the importance of story and narrative and being able to cascade it down. I like the example of the bard going from village to village. I love the call out on the use of Loom and asynchronous video. That was a really popping moment for me. And it is a great way to drive inclusivity and stickiness. You talked a lot about focusing on the user as the hero and not the facilitator or the practitioner. And I think that helps hugely in teams. And this whole concept of team decay, as an optimist, I never really talked to it, but it is what's driving my curiosity. So you've helped me figure that out. And I loved how you just said...
And the thing is, you can be an optimist while still acknowledging that, you know what?
Yeah.
Teamwork isn't where it used to be, you know?
Yeah, which is great.
The optimist in me says, you know what? We can make that better.
And you gave us some ways to make it better, you know, getting back to basics, good foundations, working agreements, team networks, networks of teams. So much good stuff to take away for any of the listeners, Mark. And you also mentioned the playbook that you've got online. So if any of our listeners want to reach out to you for either keynotes or learn more about the work that you and Atlassian are doing in this whole space, how do they best find you?
Oh, perfect. I would say definitely reach out to me. LinkedIn is probably the best place. You can find me on there. I do a lot of sharing on there from how we work at Atlassian. I just shared a new play from our playbook just last week. And so we've got a lot of new stuff that is constantly coming out. So come find me on there. Reach out. I'd be happy to have a conversation with anybody around this sort of area. Because again, at the end of the day, our mission at Atlassian is to unleash the potential of every team. It's not every customer, it's every team. So let's do that.
That's brilliant. Well, it's been great getting to know you, Mark. I look forward to the continued friendship and shared learning.
Thank you so much, Dan. I appreciate you having me on.
You bet.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,